Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to welcome everyone here in the name of our great mother, the earth, who gave birth to us all, and hopefully we will be mindful of that. And I am reminded especially of viewing earth as mother, of reading Celtic spirituality and preparing for this sermon of Anam Cara, Soul Friend. And what's this? It says pledge on it. Wait a minute. I was thinking about that word pledge and the sermon Soul Friend and how they might go together. And last night as we met it for our dinner and I spoke and having prepared the sermon, the president of the congregation and the treasurer of the congregation said, "Can't you say that tomorrow morning?" And sometimes when I speak, I just say it. And so I say, "Well, what did I say that I might say tomorrow morning?" So I have been working on how to integrate the sense of pledge and soul friend and who we are as a community. And what came to me and came to my mind was that the word pledge is actually a symbol. It's actually a window into a life, into a way of life. And that when we pledge, we make a commitment and we make promises to whatever it is that we have pledged to. And what occurred to me and why I came up with that idea of throwing it away historically when I have heard the word pledge, you know, and I would imagine a lot of Unitarian Universalists, we're going pledge to what? What do you want us to pledge to and bring our obedience to, in a sense, our line, our life in accordance with, to pledge? But I want us to remove that definition of pledge from our minds for a moment and have that word pledge be a window. And when you see the letters and hear the sound of pledge, what you see, look through that and you see this church. Look through that and you see the faces of everybody in this room. And I think the meaning of your faces to me on Sunday mornings when I get up here and speak and I see your faces and you're looking at one face, I'm looking at many faces and the warmth and the goodness that comes into me when that happens. And see that now in our community something different because of our church. Sometimes at meetings and at marches and at different things that are more of a progressive type, we now in our community often have a ministerial presence there, opening with an invocation, whereas a year ago and before that, we did not have that. But when you see that word pledge for this church, you also see that there's a ministerial presence in the larger community because of this church, because of the pledges you have made and your commitments to this church. And see the seminars that we do spiritual seminars, the detachment wheel, understanding how to let go of the things that bother us and things that we believe in so we can claim our truest selves and we can evolve with a sense of freedom, not encumbered by the oppressive beliefs and thoughts and the culture in which we grow in. And when you see the word pledge, have it be a window into that liberty and into that freedom of who we are and that we are carrying on a heritage that's thousands of years old, which I'll get to in a minute more. But when we see the word pledge and hear the word pledge, that there's something that strikes deep within us and that we say yes to that. Yes to this way of life. Yes to the values and to the principles of Unitarian Universalism. And that's what the word pledge is. It is a yes to that way of life. And so as you consider how you will contribute, if you are able to this church, remember that word yes in a spirit of generosity. And thinking of this term soul friend, recently we've talked about a model of spirituality. And in that model of spirituality that we talked about, and I think we all have a model of spirituality and a model of relationships and how we might go about organizing our lives in relationships. And in that model of spirituality, for me, it has been helpful to see it. And it's helpful for me to see models and to try to understand and grasp ideas. And if you remember, in that model, we had that sense of the soul, but in a, I hate to use the word behind or underneath or below, but don't quite know how to do it. But in a sense, there's a line or behind or something, that there's a sense of divine light within us as human beings. And when we read the mystics of all traditions throughout time, they'll talk about in their meditation when they let go of belief systems and when they let go of what they have internalized from the external world, and in the process of meditation have come to a place where they can let go of that, they discover somehow a light within. And in the Christian terms, the highest value of experiencing that light is a sense of love. In Buddhist terms, it's a sense of compassion. So there's different words to describe that. But there is this place where our self melts away. And not only are we not burdened by the things in the external world, we're also not burdened by our sense of self. And I don't know how many of you have ever felt burdened with your sense of self. But there are times that I have it, and there's a relief to that. And then there's that section, I guess, or area. And then there's this other area that's called the perfect nature. And in this line of thinking, that's where you meet the angel of philosophy, or that's where you meet Lord Buddha, Lord Jesus. It depends upon your tradition. And then so you have this divine, but then you have this mediating space that helps coordinate who we are and helps coordinate this the experience of the divine. Then in this third section, you have the soul, which in a way can be divided into, which is not good when it is, but this sense of soul is in communication with this perfect nature, is informed and matured in the experience of this sense of divine. But this soul, this aspect of us that's called soul, engages the external world. But it also engages the internal world. And that there needs to be a fluid movement between the two worlds. And when you have a soul friend, this animkara, the way it's talked about in Celtic spirituality, that our soul friend is in touch with that part of us that's in touch with our own inner world. Not just the part of us that we've created to engage the external world. Not just that part of us. The hat that we put on sometimes on Sunday morning, and I'm minister or I'm pastoral care person, and that's a hat that I wear and a role that I play to engage in the external world. That I'm the work person, I'm the mother, I'm the father, and I put that hat. Not that part. There are important parts, but not that part. The part of me that wears no hats. The part of me that is just who I am, and my celebrations in life, and in my sorrows in life, and my intimacies in life, and where I'm vulnerable in life, that part of me is what's called for in this sense of animkara, soul friend, that part of me is available. And I think of some words that might help, you know, like a sense of belonging, a sense to be known by somebody else. And when I think of my world, I think of who really knows all of me? How do I even share my story? Do I even have a place in my world? Do I even have a place in my community where I can sit down and share my story? That people really know me. And I know that if I share my story, it's going to be okay. Or do I start sharing my story and I say, well, no, not that part. Well, not that part of my history. No, that's 10 years I don't want to share. Well, with this soul friend, that place in us that says no to what we're going to share, somehow we get to a place where we can share all of who we are. And that for Thursday night, that one meeting on a Thursday night, we're going to engage in learning how to tell our stories and put that together. And that's a plug for that Thursday night meeting. And yet, we live in a world that spends billions of dollars to make us outward directed, not to engage in this part of ourselves and nurture this inner world. And as we become more outer directed, we sever our awareness of our inner world, and we only have this external part. And I was thinking of some conversations that I've had recently of people who are just very reactive at the news. And some friends, when the news came down of what the president was doing, sending more troops to Afghanistan, and how, boy, a lot of us got out or directed at that particular point in time. How Kenny, you know, we voted him in not to do that, and what's going on. And we see this outer directedness, and what I didn't experience in myself and others was that deep breath to see what that means, or that reflection to see what that means now that this man is in this position and has new awarenesses that he didn't have before, how he had to modify his position. And then I started thinking about way back Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan, and we didn't follow Jimmy Carter's plan to go to coal to get off the dependency of oil. If you've ever read his energy plan, we chose another direction with Ronald Reagan, and we kept oil and dependency of oil in the way it was. And in essence, the decision to go to war may indeed have been made in that presidential election, that we weren't even going to go to war yet for 16 years. But that war decision was made then, and that we expect somebody to get in office and within 2 years reorganize a 30-year path. And it's easy to stay external oriented and to wrestle with that and to argue with that and to fight about it. But yet here we are called to say, stop to all of that. Slow down. Stop. Breathe. Do I have a place where I can breathe? So how do we Unitarian Universalists, which are very social justice minded and very aware, given our history of the things that go in the external world and our seven principles, we call ourselves to move into democracy within our congregations and society at large, and we strive for peace and liberty. And in a sense, our seven principles even cause us to be outward directed. So how do we create a spirituality that says yes to that, but at the same time says you must find a place to stop. You must find a place to rest. You must find a place where you are not only available for a soul friend with others, but you need to become a soul friend to yourself. You need to be available to yourself. And this is part of the integration of last night's conversation and kind of personal testimony of the importance of Unitarian Universalism to myself in reference to this idea of soul friend and sharing the deep intimacies in a world that would draw us outward perpetually with anxiety and fear if we're not careful. And when I was 17 and entered a Baptist church and came to know Jesus as my personal Savior, you know, I don't hear that often in the Unitarian Universalist church, but you know, but it's true. And it was a pre-tribulational rapture church. I mean, it was the whole shebang, the whole deal. Never had really been to church to understand church. I actually thought all churches taught that and believed that, but they also taught something. I can remember. My mom's here, so it's a good story. It's my mom's here. That they taught us, you know, that you're saved and going to heaven and everybody else is going to hell. And I went home and told my mother that, and she looked at me and she says, well, that's really silly. That was probably the most wisest and best words I ever heard in my whole life, because I let that anxiety go and said, yeah, you're right, that is kind of silly. You know, so automatically I'm already not fitting into this place where I've dedicated my life to 1 week later. So trouble's already starting. But at the same time, you know, we had Labor Day picnics, wonderful picnics, Bible studies, youth groups. I mean, I was part and belonged in that community. And I was so ignorant. One time I volunteered. They said, kids can go to this thing if you want to go. And, you know, I walked down the aisle, profession of faith and all the whole thing. And so I assumed I was a member and available to go. And then the administration started coming, no, you're not really officially a member of the church unless you do such and such. But I thought I was a member. So I'm already fighting and bucking against the system. And love the people there. It was a wonderful, Perry Hall Baptist Church was a wonderful place. Good people. Then I went off to, then I moved and went off to seminary and found out that that wasn't the only theology that existed in the world, and that there were other theologies that existed in the world, and that I liked some of the other ones better than the one I had committed my life to. I never lost the personal and the experiential part of my commitment, but my beliefs started to shift, and my beliefs started to change. I started to become educated, I guess. And then I realized that I could not go back and belong to that community that I loved. So any soul friends that I had, I could no longer be soul friends with. And I remember visiting that church. So I was still in seminaries toward the end of the career, visiting that church, and thought to myself, I'll never be asked to preach at this church. And how sad that was, that I'd never be able to do that. Well, that set a pattern, because then my next step was still in the Baptist tradition, but go to a Baptist church that was a little looser in their thought. And then that fit me. And then I learned a little more and thought, no, this can't be here. Rocky Mountain Baptist, Conservative Baptist Association. No, it can't be here. Then I went to a Southern Baptist. It was a little more liberal, a little more open. But eventually, my belief changed again. No, I can't. My personal commitment to the way of life that I understood when I was 17 never changed. The experiential process never changed. The sense of love for what is right and what is good and for what I understood that Jesus to be, all of that never changed. But all these communities, it was a pattern in my life until in 1996, and I'm at Emory Seminary, I quit church. I can't do this no more. All those communities, I could not have the soul friend as this is talking about, because I would be leaving them. And there was negative coming from the church. That was the time when it was just words against people for who people were. Enough. Then I got news that stepson was going to church, never went to church, and I said, yeah, where is he going to church? You know, right? He's going to a Unitarian Universalist church. I said, what? What is that? The first problem, what is that? Right? Why didn't I know about that? Why didn't I know about it? You know, we're not really evangelical yet, but maybe we need to be a little more evangelical for who we are as Unitarian Universalists. And went and found out something. In the Unitarian Universalist Church, in my experience since 1996, your commitment to one another, my commitment to the community, the experience of kindness and justice are what's core. Not a set of beliefs. So in the Unitarian Universalist Church, I can begin to develop this anamkara, this sense of soul friendship with somebody, and not have a fear that if my belief changes, I've got to leave the church, or I've got to lose friends, or if I'm with a friend. And we have a course that says develop your own theology. I mean, that's just who we are. That I can be here and have a sense of emotional safety that in my spiritual pilgrimage and in my cultural pilgrimage, if my belief system changes or I learn something that's different, I can incorporate new material. We have classes on philosophy and spiritual practices that are really very different. And it's okay. And I can still come. And it's going to be all right. And there's tolerance and there's acceptance and there's patience with us as we are in a process of transformation and change. And that's what the Unitarian Universalist Church is. And when I see the word pledge, that's my experience. That's what pledge symbolizes. And on a larger scale, when I think of Unitarian Universalist congregations and soul friends through history. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh, a Buddhist monk, talks about how we are to love our faith ancestors and that we are to be aware of our faith ancestors. And I read the prophets in the Hebrew sacred text as they prophesy against economic and political and religious oppression, that I find that the Unitarian Universalist principles and who we are as a people, as our conceptual mind frame moves through time, we're at least 2,800 years old. We've got a long history behind us of fighting for social justice, and we're part of that tradition. And I started thinking about that. Yes, that's who we are, that I'm claiming that I'm in that historical lineage. I'm part of that process. And there's a lot of talk in the last decade or so about patriotism and this country and the love for this country. We even hear some say America's the greatest country and always love it, and we make fun of that kind of stuff, you know, because we think, wait a minute, no, we question it. But then I realized that if it were not for Unitarians, to be clear, at least according to David McCollum, who wrote John Adams' biography that they made the TV series after, he said that if it wasn't for John Adams pushing to get the Declaration of Independence signed by July 4th, if it wasn't for him pushing to get that signed by July 4th, we would not have had the revolution, at least at that moment in time, because on July 7th, England passed a more tolerant process of what the colonies were protested against, and it would have lessened the reason for the revolution, and we wouldn't have had the revolution, and it was a Unitarian. That's the reason for the Revolutionary War. Could a Unitarian run for the office of president today? Could a Unitarian Universalist run for Senate? Right? No, is the answer. But when you look back at the formation of this country, the values of the Socinians from 1400, where we draw some of our roots of the separation of church and state and the tolerance of other religions of who we are as Unitarian Universalists, when we look at the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and the Bill of Rights that Jefferson put together with Madison and pushed to get into the fabric, the Unitarian Universalist philosophy of life is woven into the fabric of the formation of our nation. We're in trouble. We can't even run for office. I mean, maybe we don't feel it, but that's persecution. That I can't run for office because my religious beliefs will come up and it'll be a problem. So when I think about my pledge, I'm given money, life energy, labor, whatever it may be, to support a way of life that's at least 2,800 years old, that's woven into the fabric of this nation, that created religious tolerance, that created a place where religion ought not to matter if we're going to run for office. What we think and who we are as a people and our ideas should be dominant. And now, we're being squeezed. Our philosophy of life, our way of thinking, is being squeezed. Helen and I was joking. I guess maybe it wasn't a joke. Coming up, and I said, at this big church down here, I said, well, there's John Calvin. And I said, you know, John Calvin, Protestant religious leader, persecuted Unitarians. And I said, and we're headed to Michael Servetus. Michael Servetus, founder of Unitarianism in Europe, who was burned at the stake by John Calvin for not believing in the Trinity. And I said, that's the way of our life. Calvin said, we're going to where the burnings occur. You know, for that thought to even come to me, I maybe it means I'm odd, I don't know. But I think it says something. So when we commit to this church, and we pledge to this church, we commit and pledge to a way of life that has been in protest of oppression and tyranny for over 2,800 years. We pledge to a way of life that we try to create a place that's emotionally safe, that our belief systems which if we're maturing, our belief systems will change over time, that that's a welcomed process of spiritual exploration. And we commit and pledge our lives, energies, and monies to that process as well. We're not only taking care of ourselves in this community and individually, but we're also committing to a way of life that's bigger than us. And when I look around in our community, and friends, and I'm friends with other ministers in our community, I don't know if I'm bragging or stating the fact or what, but this church is the light for that voice that's woven into the fabric of our nation, that's been protesting tyranny, that's open to spiritual transformation and change. This church is it. We are important to this community. You are important to this community. I'm going to end with a friendship blessing from John O'Donohue in Adam Carl, his book, A Friendship Blessing. May you be blessed with good friends. May you learn to be a good friend to yourself. May you be able to journey to that place in your soul where there is great love, warmth, feeling, and forgiveness. And may this change you. May it transfigure that which is negative, distant, and cold in you. May you be brought into real passion, kinship, and affinity of belonging. May you treasure your friends. May you be good to them, and may you be there for them. May they bring all blessings, all the blessings, challenges, truth, and the light that you need for your journey. May you never be isolated. May you always be in the gentle nest of belonging with your animal. Kara.